it's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying, there is no running, there is no hiding, there's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast. Okay, we're here with Dez from Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, part of ongoing relief efforts organized by anarchists and other anti-authoritarians in Florida. You're getting ready to go to Puerto Rico, and we're going to talk about so much stuff in this episode about just what's been going on since Irma hit, the relief efforts, the reaction from the state, nonprofits, and the far right, and also just kind of like coming to grips what's actually going on in Puerto Rico. But I'm just curious, can you just tell your story as far as just like how the hurricane with Irma played out and just how you got involved in all this relief effort stuff?
For sure. Autonomously, I went to the lower ninth after Katrina to get involved with the relief efforts there. Since then, I have like autonomously responded in West Virginia and St. Augustine. I got involved with folks that had actually been a part of the founding of the Common Ground Collective in New Orleans after Katrina. And a couple of years ago, they kind of like founded Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, which is a decentralized grassroots, like solidarity based movement that believes in, like, their guiding principles are like leveraging privilege to act in solidarity with affected communities, to like not be another top-down model, to be, you know, building power from below and having communities lead their own recovery efforts, and us standing like beside and behind them and supporting communities to empower them in a time of like shock and awe, in a time where state also like entrenches their power, you know, and disaster capitalism rolls in, you know, as the storm surge after the initial storm. So I got involved with that a couple of years ago, and we responded, you know, in Baton Rouge with the floods that were happening there. And so just immediately before Irma, we called an emergency meeting with folks from Food Not Bombs, Black Lives Matter, or Restorative Justice Coalition folks, and all other like autonomous anarchists and full anti-authoritarians working in Tampa on various campaigns. And we immediately started building an infrastructure where we could respond, because in those days before the storm hit, it would look like it was going to hit Tampa head on. So we wanted to have a model in place for response here in our community. And then we wanted to have something, some infrastructure to transfer those efforts to other communities that were, that ended up being hit, because we weren't sure what was going to happen. So we sheltered in this St. Paul's Lutheran Church that we don't have any connection to, but they opened their sanctuary for us and like 20 other folks in the community. And then they gave us the use of a space, like an empty house that was the parsonage. And immediately we started mapping out like affinity groups and autonomously organizing, doing assessment runs to vulnerable communities, making sure that folks were, you know, asserting their self-determined, you know, needs, and that we were listening and responding to those needs, and, you know, in a participatory effort in rebuilding. And we were fortunate, but other communities were not so fortunate. So since the storm, we've been to Immokalee twice. We set up a clinic there and delivered like an 18-foot truck full of supplies, and, you know, listened and talked to the community members to see how they wanted the response to look like. And we went to the Keys to to go to like housing projects and talk to folks there who'd had no aid come in, even though FEMA's like got it under occupation to defend wealthy homes from what they in their nightmares are crazed looters wanting everything that rich people have there. And we've just been to a number of different places, and now we see what's happening in Puerto Rico. We see the state's ridiculous ridiculous failure for the people in Puerto Rico that are suffering, and now we're trying to organize both for direct action of folks getting to the island, getting aid in, and figuring out how to get supplies in and mass, and also how we can support efforts remotely to put pressure on these agencies that always wedge themselves in between resources and the people who need resources to make them obsolete, remove them, get them out of the way so the people get the things that they need immediately.
Great. You mentioned the state's disastrous failure. Can you talk about why you think the state failed in the wake of the hurricane and how?
For sure. Do you want me to specify Florida or Puerto Rico right now?
I mean, if you can, talk about both, because I mean, that's really on with people's minds.
Yeah, no worries. So as far as my community, police did what police do by harassing the most marginalized communities, like the houseless community here was the folks that refused to go to shelters. Like some folks told us when we were providing transport to a mosque that didn't have police there, using it as a trap to send people to jail that had legal issues or were undocumented, people told us that they would rather die than go to shelters. These folks that were exercising their agency and their self-determination to stay on the streets were Baker acted, which is like an involuntary committing them to like, they have to be they're under arrest basically for refusing to go into a shelter where there's police everywhere checking people in. And some of the shelters were making houseless folks wear color-coded bracelets identifying them as houseless, and they were segregated from the rest of the sheltered community and othering them and treating them like shit. So there was that. Our brilliant mayor said that we were about to get punched in the face. Those were his words of comfort to the people. And he made very explicit that his priority in the storm as we were facing down this historic disaster that was like heading straight toward us at the time that he made this statement was that he would have like the strongest reaction to people looting, and that police were ready to react to what he saw his community as like crazily looting everywhere. The kind of opportunism that the state is known for, they, turn that and project that onto the people during a state of disaster. So that was my community facing down those issues during the storm. And then also the situation in Puerto Rico. So now there's a boat, the USNS, I believe it's called Comfort, the hospital ship, is 5 days away from getting to the island. It's just been requested to be sent there, and the island has been going all of this time where resources are wasting and dwindling away. 10 people have died. People are going, eating rotting food. Gas is being regulated. Banks, like money that's being taken out, is being regulated. So like these requests should have been made immediately to get resources to the people. Like FEMA is sitting there with electricity and water and food for the, 10,000 federal workers that are there. But the people that endured two hurricanes, in such a short period of time, in a week or over a week, they're the ones that are going without and suffering while FEMA tries to figure out what to do with all the aid that's trying to get in there. So again, like unnecessarily wedging themselves in between there. And while, the Trump administration goes on and on about NFL players exercising their autonomy against the state, focusing on that, there's very little focus on like people are dying, people are suffering, people are struggling. They need to get logistical support in there to clear the roads, to get fuel where it needs to go, to get food where it needs to go, to get medicine where it needs to go. There are hospitals without power saying that they have like 2 to 3 days worth of supplies left. This is a complete failure because the resources are there. And like our space, or like community space, we call it the hub. That's that, you know, we have a free clinic out of a free market. People can get clothes, they can get showers, they can do laundry. There's a lending library, anything. Like, they've been coming there bringing resources because the warehouse here that's shipping resources to another big warehouse in Puerto Rico said they're full now. They're not taking anything else. Like, you know, we want to see like an open, like get these federal, you know, entities out of the way and let the people step in and take over it if the state's not going to, you know, do what they think they have the monopoly on. Like, we want them to accept ships. We want them to accept workers from everywhere that can clear the roads and do the jobs that, that they claim to be able to do.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. You also mentioned in the introduction how you started building infrastructure. I'm just curious, what kind of infrastructure was that, and how did you all go about building it?
So we tried to get something in place for housing for folks that needed housing. We got affinity groups set up for supplies and distro for rescue. We had two like rescue boats ready to go. We had medical crew to find a medical working group. We had you know, this parsonage space where we would be able to accept volunteers coming in from anywhere who could meet up with us, and we could be a link in a chain to get resources out to where it's needed. So we tried to have this network in place and have it ready to go to respond to our community, and likewise to have it ready to transform into responding, you know, in solidarity with other communities that were affected. So we had defined affinity groups and had, you know, extensive planning and conversation and supplies and water and food and everything ready to go, to where minutes after the storm, we were out assessing communities, assessing what roads were blocked, assessing how people could get to places they needed to get to, checking on people's homes. You know, so we were, you know, we were in place and ready, and we were running, you know, rescue during the storm, during the hurricane, when we had a hotline set up that was peopled 24/7, where people were calling when they spotted, you know, like there was a woman in mental health crisis that was seen running down the street with a flashlight screaming for help in the middle of the hurricane, and the crew went out of medics to locate this person. So we were ready to mobilize. You know, we had plans so that we would be ready and there would be no delay in our response. Like, that really common saying is like, the first responders in a disaster aren't like the police and fire and EMS. It's like, it's your neighbors, it's the people in your community. So we were like acting, you know, as that, and in that role, you know, in that way.
Well, on a day-to-day basis, how many people do you feel use the hub space that are coming in for different supplies and food and to use the facility?
Every day this week that we've gotten there, there have been at least 20 people waiting outside. Yeah, there have been people that, like, we just had an open mic there this evening, but people have been flooding in to get foods, to get water. People have been coming in, like, we've had folks in trauma and mental health crisis that we've been able to get into hotel rooms and get placed in housing. And connect them with a network that would help support other needs that they had. We've had, you know, a person who escaped an abusive relationship come in with second degree burns, and we're able to treat her wounds and find her a place, a safer space that she could rest and be out of that abusive situation. So there's, I don't know, maybe 50 people come through this space every day.
And they're probably, the people that are coming through are also bringing back supplies for much larger groups of people, not just themselves.
Yeah, for sure. Like, people who have come to get supplies because they needed it or are like donating back. And then there's other people that are just coming and dropping off supplies that we're separating to respond in Immokalee and in the Keys. And, you know, we've transformed into, because, I mean, Tampa is okay. We're not, you know, in recovery phase from the storm any longer, but we're just responding, like, straight responding to the disaster of capitalism right now. We're just responding to people that are impoverished in our community that are coming in because they need food, they need water, they need medical care, they need medicine. We have a small over-the-counter pharmacy there with like pain relievers, cough and cold, like things that people don't have access to because of the disaster of capitalism. That's the baseline disaster that people exist in. And so we're responding to that in our community while simultaneously we're acting in solidarity with folks in other communities here that are still rebuilding and trying to build power and amplify the struggle in Puerto Rico.
How do you feel like people's overall feeling towards the government, Trump and the state and like local authorities is like in regards to how they're handling the disaster? If there is like a consensus or if there are major blocks of people that feel a certain way, what is it?
I mean, this is Trump's Katrina. Like the failures of administration in the state during the disaster in Katrina that was like greatly exacerbated and turned into like, you know, vigilantism in the streets, like the things that the state that were legitimized because the state is the state, like that this is the crisis that's going to be unfolding. This is Trump's Katrina. So I think a consensus among the people that are watching what's happening right now is that once again, the state has positioned itself as a wedge between the people, you know, people power, solidarity, supply, support, things that we have to offer that we're here waiting. And there's this wedge between them and the people that are suffering in need, that are sick, that need medical care, that need food and water and fuel and money and cell phone service so they can contact loved ones and let them know that they're okay. Like, once again, we have this wedge that we have to deal with. So I think this state makes itself like as a very visible enemy to the people in all kinds of, you know, in every way in these situations. So it's very clear and people are frustrated. It takes more than a, you know, a sympathetic look crafted, you know, with, you know, carefully worded sentences on a teleprompter to have people really feel like we see what's happening. This aid should have been ordered like in the minutes after the storm. Right. It should have already been there. We have 5-day wait when the hospitals are saying in 3 days they'll be out of supplies. So the people who die and suffer every hour without supplies, like that's, you know, that's because the state didn't act fast enough.
Yeah. And I feel like with Puerto Rico, it's like people almost forget. It's like these are American citizens. I mean, obviously
but fuck that because yeah. Why should it matter though? You know,
like, well, I totally agree.
Like Hillary Clinton, who's a horrible monster herself. Like she tweeted like, you know, these are American citizens. What the fuck does it matter? Like get help out there. These are like living beings that are suffering. Get aid out there. It doesn't matter what citizens they are. Forget like borders and attachments and nations, like get out there and respond. If the resources are sitting there, do something to funnel them to the people that need them.
Oh yeah, like, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, I just think it's interesting that it seems like a lot of people are like, oh, it's Puerto Rico, who gives a shit? Like we never think about Puerto Rico, you know, this history of colonization and, you know, US occupation of that island, but I don't know. It's just, it's so disgusting, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's very frustrating.
And I'm, you know, one other question on a tangent. I know that there's been several articles that have been written kind of about like leftists or anarchists or, you know, various groups like doing aid and support. Like, is the media still trying to come around and like talk to you all about like what people are doing here? Is that kind of passed? Because it seems like in the media cycle that no one is talking really about Florida or Texas anymore. It's just like the storm is over. You know, who cares what happens to those people? And now they're starting to talk a little bit about Puerto Rico. But like you said, there's all this other stuff distracting people.
Yeah. Mainstream media, they come to where the ice cream truck is, you know, like they'll come where it's entertainment nowadays. The support that we've gotten from media have been from like IGD and Indie Media out of Australia and Crime Think and like, you know, comrade media outlets that have been like, you know, blasting and amplifying what we're doing. And that's been support. But like in the very beginning of this, some news outlet, I don't know, came to our space and it was disturbing. They like called us a charity and it was just they're tone deaf. So it's better if media stays, you know, I don't know if if media had some teeth to it, if they had the urge to actually do something, I feel like they could be very influential. But I think they're good at building hype. And then I think they're good at, it's like social conditioning, because they'll build hype. They'll build fear. They'll fear monger. They'll build hype. And then just as quickly, they'll move on to the next situation. So it teaches people to like a new episode of a show, you know, that, and it's harmful because it leaves a wake of destruction that people could be plugging into and getting involved in, you know, that just doesn't happen. But
yeah. And I mean, I feel like we've definitely come around to that conclusion. I feel like, 8 months ago, when we were starting to get a lot of media requests, we felt like, well, maybe we can talk to some of them. But now I totally agree that it's better for them just to like not talk about you.
Right. And
to
exactly.
Develop their own narrative. But I was just curious, there's so much talk about healthcare in the United States right now. How have you all addressed healthcare, especially how you're organized? I think you brought up, you set up a clinic and just supplies, but how do you do all that?
So, I mean, we're not like acting. It's very simple when you remove like, those bureaucracies and those red tape and those, you know, like wedges between yourself and the people. Like people with medical training, street medic training, EMT training, we have pharmacists, we have clinical psychiatrists, trauma counselor, acupuncturists, Reiki practitioner, people that have this training that want to offer it to people. So we have a free clinic. It's a wellness center. We have people can come there. Like, we didn't declare hours. The hours like kind of came about themselves. 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And people, like, we had a sign like free medical care, you know, welcome. And people would come back if they just needed like a quiet place to sit and fucking like just process, you know, and just time to like quiet, you know, themselves and their thoughts. And then we had people that like, you know, had wounds from, you know, cutting trees and clearing debris, and people that, you know, we're like overwhelmed and anxious. Like we're just like the way life should be. It's just a microcosm of like the better world that we envision. Like this free clinic is open for people. We have tons of donations of over-the-counter medications, of supplies to treat traumatic injuries, of herbal treatments and different herbal teas and different tinctures and, you know, we and essential oils, things like that. So people can come in, they can choose what kind of treatment that they feel comfortable with. And then, you know, we can treat them accordingly, like without all the bullshit that comes with regular, you know, like we should have free healthcare in this land, like we should, but we don't. So people are lacking, people are living with, you know, conditions that cause them a host of issues. Like there's a houseless person who comes in and he gets treated, he cut himself on a barnacle showering in like a really polluted lake, and he got like this really bad bacterial disease in his skin. So he comes in and it just like treating someone as a human being, as, you know, an equal, as someone whose liberation is like bound up with your own. It just, you know, that's healing. And then treating them for free, giving them, you know, information, instructions, you know, that might be helpful in treating what they're dealing with, and then medicine to take with them, and empowering them to treat themselves, and, you know, to come in anytime they need something. It's, you know, that's how things should be. So we're, you know, this is a prefigurative politics of what we see. You know, the ends should be are the means that we're using now.
And you brought up politics. Like, is the anarchism of the space, or, you know, the anti-authoritarian nature, is that like out in front, or is that just kind of like how you're engaging in the work, or is it both?
It's everything. Like the space is very geared towards like supporting like autonomous direct action, anarchism, anti-fascism. We have a table full of literature with, about about looting, about, you know, which i.e. just like taking what you need to reclaim your humanity and taking what you need to survive. You know, like supporting like actions of the people in a disaster to empower themselves. We have literature on food, not bombs, and dumpster diving, on like anti-militarism, anti-authoritarianism. Like this space is saturated with that spirit and that heart, you know. It's a beautiful space. I can provide you with some photos if you like, and some visuals, but we have, you know, revolutionary Zapatista quotes up on the walls, and, you know, Black Panther revolutionaries, like, posters up. We like, the space is very, it has a lot of fucking spirit and heart to it. And, yeah, it's good.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about how the far right has responded to MAD, and how have they attempted to either attack it in a variety of ways or sort of sidetrack the work.
For sure, for sure. So, one, fascists and you know, Nazis and white nationalists are not very busy doing any kind of disaster relief work, so they have time to do this kind of shit. Augustus Invictus posted on his Facebook page about sending in phony rescue calls to the hotline, you know, where people were working to like actually like help people who are really trapped. So he boasted on his you know, running for senator page about you know, about doing that.
He's doing really well, by the way. He's gonna win.
Oh yeah. Okay.
No, he's not at all. He's doing horrible.
I didn't believe you. It's okay. But we've had like pro-Confederate folks that have a history of doxing activists here in Tampa, or folks doing, you know, organizing work in Tampa, sitting outside taking photos and videos of the space. And a few times, so this person has shown up trying to cause like chaos and panic, saying he needs everything we have in this space, everything. Saying that, you know, Polk County is underwater, the water's up to the streets. I was just like generally trying to cause hysteria and confusion, so we would just load his truck up with, you know, quote, everything we had in the space so he could, you know, take everything. But his story like kept changing, and he had very bizarre behavior. And then he actually told us he was with the 3 percenters. So at that moment we were like, okay, you know, you're getting nothing, and you can, you know, head out of here, because we're not, you know, we don't, you know, basically leave. And so then after that, he attempted like 3 more times with 3 different organizers in Mutual Aid Disaster Relief to contact them, saying like, you know, I'm working to help folks in the Keys that are like desperate, and we need everything you have. We need help right now. Like that same like urgent, frantic tone. And when we all got together and figured out this is the same person, he then called me and said, there's 15 guys on the way to your space right now. They're going to take everything you have. And I told him not to come. And it was a ridiculous conversation. And then he engaged in like texting me saying that, I'm, you know, accusing him of being paramilitary or something. Like his narrative, like it just was disconnected and didn't make sense and very disjointed. But he basically tried to come to the space and cause chaos and confusion and take everything we had. So, you know, it's typical, it's to be expected. They're, you know, horrible people that still, even now, even as like, you know, anarchists and anti-fascists are like struggling to try to figure out how to get, you know, aid en masse to Puerto Rico, and working in on the ground in communities everywhere that are affected, and helping, you know, with community rebuilding efforts. Even as that's happening, fascists and white nationalists are planning their rallies and trying to distract and disrupt the work that's happening. So, I mean, it's not surprising, but that's what's happening.
Yeah. And also the Oath Keepers are out there as well, right? They're trying to do their own sort of disaster relief efforts as well.
I have no idea about that.
Okay. It might be in Texas. I know it's on their website. And also, we've heard that like Redneck Revolt has tried to basically push some of the 3 percenter chapters to basically just like, you know, back off and leave us the fuck alone. Is that true?
Not sure about that, but we did have one Redneck Revolt folk come to our space and talk to us in the wake of those attempts by this person and the pro-confed people that were taking photos of the space to talk to us about like security and you know, really supportive and acting in solidarity with us and trying to assist with awesome. Yeah, with intel and stuff like that. Yeah,
great. Well, let's switch gears again and talk about Puerto Rico. Just looking at this thing, I mean, you were saying that within a matter of days, like supplies are going to run out. I'm just curious, what do you think how is the state going to react to this situation, if at all? And then also, what do you think should be the on the ground plan for people that are there, but also people that want to like send aid?
So the state being like the military occupation that's on the ground there, like the FEMA occupation?
Well, both that, but then also just like how do you think it's going to play out here on the mainland as well?
So people have already started like threatening the fears of if we don't help them, there'll be a mass exodus to the mainland. And I think that once people get desperate, that looks like taking things that they need. And I think that the state traditionally reacts to that by criminalizing, killing, jailing, imprisoning, scapegoating those folks. And then I'm hoping that it doesn't come to that. What I think should happen, what I know should happen, is that logistics should have been planned. Like, you know, it's a complex situation with a lot of people involved, but the funding is there. If we have funding to, you know, drop an 11-ton bomb in Afghanistan, we have the funding to assist people that are dealing with, you know, the second disastrous hurricane that's hit them in the last, like, you know, week and a half. So I think that aid should have been requested immediately. I don't think that people should have had to pressure this joke like administration to get supplies out there, to get this hospital ship requested, to get aid to get out to the people. But also, I don't believe that, like, I believe that the people power that's available and the resources that are available, like, people are pouring aid into the hub space trying to get it to Puerto Rico, and the warehouse is telling them, turning them away, that they've originally gone to, saying, oh, we're full, you know, we can't send anymore. Like, all these resources that we have that are sitting in warehouses, that are, you know, sitting in airports, like the cruise lines, where we have a campaign that we just like defined tonight to pressure the cruise lines into like, we will pay for your fuel, like, and we will fill your ships. Just get the fucking ships to the island and get people what they need. And then on the ground, logistical support should be like clearing roads so that that aid can be immediately offloaded and distributed directly to the neighborhoods, to the people that need them.
Right. And what does it look like again? Like, what has the state actually provided? You described FEMA occupation, but what does that actually look like? Like, what has that been their response so far?
So from my understanding, there's 10,000 federal workers on the ground. They're saying that they can't distro because the roads are not cleared. They're trying to get fuel to the various like areas to fill like up the gas pumps so people can get fuel. But if there's 10,000 people on land, on the ground, that are soaking up, you know, that have access to like they're broadcasting, like, and the news is broadcasting, they're having electricity and signal, like they should focus on projecting resources to the people. From what I understand, like, aid isn't being readily distributed because the roads aren't cleared, and that, like, independent ships, especially ships of a foreign nation, are not being accepted in. So we're trying to contact, like, the Freedom Flotilla, the boats to Gaza, trying to bring humanitarian aid in and breach the blockade at the seaport there. Like, we're trying to reach out to those folks. We're trying to reach out to cruise lines so that those supplies can get in there. They say they have, like, you know, I was just reading an article that they have, like, you know, this many million liters of water that are en route there. But this hurricane passed days ago. This stuff should have been en route there already. We know that it takes 5 days roughly for a ship to arrive there. So it was clear, you know, days before this hurricane hit Puerto Rico that was already, you know, decimated by when Irma came through, that when Maria was coming through, that, you know, these ships need to be en route, like, and staging and ready to move in immediately after the storm passes. And that didn't happen. And there's wide critique of the administration for sending in, I think they requested 2 ships to go in. Uh-huh. And the scale of the disaster is so great that we need, like, everything that can be sent. So Trump touting that, you know, oh, federal aid will be, you know, sent over immediately. And, you know, we're getting the ship on the way. Why did it take so long to respond? It should have been, you know, like, the hospitals will run out of supplies allegedly 2 days before these ships arrive.
And when you compare like this response with what happened under Katrina, like, do you think it's just like bureaucracy or government action? Is it structural white supremacy? I mean, what is it? I mean, you would think that they would want to, you know, Trump would want to take this opportunity to score some points. Like, what is it exactly? Like, are these people just fucking stupid? Like, what is it?
It's apathy. They don't give a fuck. It's more than apathy. It's, they don't give a fuck. They, like, hate, like, they are okay with people. I guess that is apathy. They are okay with people that are dying. And why would we not assume that Trump would want to, you know, like, why would we not assume that he wouldn't be on his Twitter spending more time waging war against the NFL and dissenting players rather than, you know, focusing all his attention on this? Like, everything this person has done has been, like, contrary to what any humane response would be to any situation. So there's no surprise in that. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. I don't know. I think that, even like with Katrina, like the fancy French Quarter, like the touristy area is protected, defended, kept going, kept profiting for the state. And, you know, the gentrification and otherwise abandonment of people in the lower ninth was, and is still what's happening, you know, the vigilantism that occurred there where people were, like, white people were, like, said it was like pheasant season and were shooting and killing, you know, and there were black bodies in the streets with bullet holes, like, you know, and black water was on the ground. I mean, this is the state's response. There's, you know, it's not surprising. This is what happens. And when a desperate situation starts to, you know, exacerbate in Puerto Rico and people start to do what they need to do to survive, I fear for something like that happening. You know, I fear for, you know, the way they, you know, and that to them that legitimizes, like, okay, so this is a problem where we can just move in and shoot, criminalize, or kill people rather than spending the money that it takes to make sure that people are okay. They'd rather spend the money on war and empire building and, you know, and yeah, it is structural white supremacy. You know, if this was, a European nation or any other nation where it wasn't, you know, people of color, I think the response would be much different.
Yeah, I completely agree. You brought up a term a couple times, disaster capitalism. And I know that it's the title of a book by Naomi Klein, but I'm just curious, how does that concept or the idea that, like, after a disaster, the government comes in or, you know, big corporations come in and kind of restructure things to their benefit, like use the chaos basically to further their own ends. But how do you see that at play in all of these situations with the hurricane?
Because people are in a state of vulnerability and they're in a state of shock and awe. And when people are in a state like that, it's very easy because everything's unsettled for the state to move in and say, like, you know, comrades of mine were down in, you know, in the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, where they're like a school for, in the lower ninth that could easily be repaired is like the police are guarding it, like riot police are guarding it. So, solidarity, like workers that have come in to work with the community to rebuild the school, so they can't get in and like muck and gut and repair it, you know, there's, you know, like projects that like, okay, they're damaged. Let's just wipe them away now. Like there's, this is a time for the state to further entrench their power because the people are in a state of shock. Like their foundation and their infrastructure has been totally like, you know, rattled, and they're, you know, emotionally, physically in that state where the state can come in and they can, you know, gentrify neighborhoods and criminalize people. They can, you know, restructure and act more freely than, you know, in times where people aren't disaster affected.
Right. Well, on a positive note, do you see what you're building in your area? Do you see it growing? Like, could it expand? We had Scott Crow on the program. He talked about in the lower ninth ward after Katrina that, you know, the Common Ground Clinic grew exponentially. Do you see that happening with what you're doing?
For sure. I mean, these efforts can be replicated. They can grow. They can be replicated in any space that, you know, has the values and ethic of autonomy, direct action, anti-authoritarianism, and, you know, anti-racism. Like, these are efforts that can be duplicated everywhere. And that's why we like our ethic is like a decentralized response to disaster. Like we are not just in the physical space. There are folks that are a part of our infrastructure that are everywhere that are supporting our efforts through, you know, like coordinating volunteers coming down and through monitoring social media for things like, you know, Augustus Invictus and his, you know, brilliant disaster relief work of calling in phony rescue calls to the hotlines, you know? So it is decentralized. It is happening everywhere. It is growing, and we still have people coming in and still have people like dropping donations and contacting, you know, folks through, you know, our various networks to say, you know, how can we get involved with Puerto Rico response, with, you know, what's happening with Houston? Like, we're finding each other and empowering each other. So, you know, the efforts are growing, and the situation itself is radicalizing people and making people see that, you know, we are, you know, I don't know. To use an already used term, like, we are the people we've been waiting for. And like, this is how communities should respond to crises like capitalism and crises like the state and crises like unnatural disasters and climate chaos that, uh-huh.
You know, one other big question, just, do you feel like, I almost feel like this, like, as time goes on, the state more and more just does not care about like how it is perceived. Like, it just seems like more and more like the state itself, like, just does not give a fuck. Like, it's just like basically out for its own interest, and, you know, it doesn't really care about like popular opinion or if certain people hate it. Like, it doesn't really seem to care. I mean, do you agree, or would you say no?
No, for sure. I agree, because like the facade of democracy was like taken off when with Trump, I guess. The state has always been the state and has always been a murderous force and a colonizing, authoritarian, hierarchical disaster for people that have to endure it. But Trump almost, I don't want to say did a favor, but we are facing an enemy that we can see more clearly. Like, we can see the monster that we're fighting because the monster is not wearing a disguise anymore. So I think that, yeah. And the thing is that's being revealed is like whatever percentage, I think it's 34% last time I checked, of people still supporting this person are openly supporting the fact that a sexual predator, a suspected rapist, an international arms dealer, a racist with a long history of racist actions and racist words and in his business and in his personal life, like that, like they're still supporting that. So they are the state. They are like an arm of the state because they're the troops on the ground. In other words, so like, no, I totally agree. Like, the state does not give a fuck. The state never gave a fuck, but they at least kept the mask on. And now the mask is like, it's off and we can see. But I'd rather see the monster that I'm fighting than be fighting, like, you know, trying to find out what's behind, you know, a smile and a suit. Like, you know, right. So Yeah.
Right. Well, for people listening, let's say there's three different types of people. There's somebody that can't come to where you are and just wants to donate. And then there's another person that wants to come to where you are and help. And then also there's somebody that wants to do what you're doing where they are. What would you say to those three people?
So for people that want to replicate these efforts, I think it's something that's already in the hearts of every like anarchist and anti-authoritarian, like autonomous direct action, decentralized organizing, self-organized, you know, grassroots mobilization, in every situation. Like, you know, just happens to be right now that climate chaos is like, you know, the earth is attacking, you know, back after all the shit that has been done to it. So I think like replicating these efforts, like what we have done is finding a space, like a communal space where folks can come in, feel welcome, defining like services that can be shared there and provided, like tool lending library or, you know, book lending library. We want to start a books to prisoners, chapter working out of this space, you know, a space where people can come and get literature, radical literature, where people can share, like a comrade of mine was saying, like, you know, that they had learned from a Black Panther elder, like that you provide for people, but at the same time, simultaneously, you raise their consciousness. So doing actions like that and showing by what you're doing, like that there's no bureaucracy, there's no red tape. It's just communities helping communities. For people that want to assist from afar with these efforts, I don't know if you want to, if you would like to amplify the struggle by sharing things like we put out a campaign trying to pressure cruises to, you know, fill the ships and get them to Puerto Rico, if they want to amplify those struggles, if they want to share information, if they want to disseminate literature on what's happening, if they want to donate on mutualaiddisasterrelief.org, there's a link to the Amazon wish list for Louisiana, for Texas, for Florida. There's a link where they can donate through the Action Network to Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, and that you know, that money goes directly towards paying for like supply trucks that are going out directly to communities to distro directly to people. I forget what the third type of person was that, I hit all of them?
Where can they donate money to? Like, what's the, I mean, you all are getting ready to go to Puerto Rico. So, I mean, everybody listening to this, if you can, you know, hey, maybe don't go down to the corner store tonight. Save that $10 and put it towards what you're doing. But how can people donate and where should they go to donate?
For sure. If folks want to donate to efforts to like flights for people going to Puerto Rico, people are going to be paying for like suitcases of 50 pounds to like fill supplies with to have as carry-ons to bring with them, like mosquito nets and medicine and Pedialyte and things like that. They can go to mutualaiddisasterrelief.org, click on donate, and then they'll have the options of the Amazon wishlist, but they can also just donate financially and they can make a comment that their donation is to go to the crew that's going out to Puerto Rico that's going to be staggered over the next 2 weeks.
Awesome. Anything else you want to say, how people can support, or anything we didn't cover that you want to mention, or any shout outs you want to give?
Just love to like every person that's in the streets fighting like fascists, fighting like these like disasters that just keep happening, like the people on the ground in Oaxaca, to Puerto Rico, to Tampa, to Houston, to Immokalee. Like, I deeply appreciate everyone that's taking autonomous direct action to strengthen and stand in solidarity with other communities. And, you know, we're here, we're a resource, we're like definitely like thrilled and psyched to like get in contact with other folks that are organizing autonomously in other places. So any connections that could be made would be amazing. Everybody can find us like it's mutualaiddisasterrelief.org.
Awesome. Hey, so inspiring, so exciting. I know it's got to be really heavy stuff and work that you're doing, but it's from our vantage point, you know, not in Florida, it's just super amazing to watch and just super inspiring. And best of luck to y'all, and everybody should donate if they can. Give something, go to Matt's website. We'll definitely have the link on this podcast. But thanks so much for coming on, and best of luck to all your work.
Thank you. Thanks for all your support. We really, really appreciate all of you.
They tried to kill my child to shut her up. Well, guess what? You just magnified her.
It's me, back. Heather Heyer, rest in power. Nazi punks, fuck off. Not my president. Awkward. We about to blow up from a nuclear bomb. I'm about to show up, got the right to bear arms. If we don't all die tomorrow, I'ma come for them blondes. Tiki torch holding motherfuckers right in your wrongs. Nazis marching on the streets and Nazis in charge. There's even Nazis on these beats and Nazis on the blogs. Questioning me, I got the motherfucking scars. And it could have been me who got crushed by that car. American free, it's white man free for all. And I'ma tell you the truth, I got that white skin card. I never sat back and said, oh thank God, oh God. I cried looking out my backyard, should have been there too. Smash Nazis for the cause, and I used to do that, but now my kids are my job. And thanks to my wife, I got the time to spit bars. This'll cost my paycheck, getting stalked by my boss. Fuck Trump, fuck the system that made him. Fuck afraid pundits and the lies who praise him. Fuck you white apologists, privilege is amazing. I know you won't acknowledge the world you were raised in. Fuck Trump, fuck the system that made him. Fuck afraid pundits and the lies who praise him. Fuck you white apologists, privilege is amazing. I know you won't acknowledge the world you were raised in. I didn't hang up the weapon, it was just a hiatus. High haters, back to speak the truth on the latest. Every single news channel calling in the favors. Bunch of masturbators, afraid to be the bravest. One in three black men, locked behind cages. Privileged ignoramus, posting on your pages. Come catch me, I'd love to show you what the pain is. Hide behind your hoods, you'll know what a braid is. Masks on our faces, no difference with our races. Only race we face is protection from our neighbors. What global meltdown? That's what your aim is. You won't get through my door, motherfucking racist. Raise fists, shit on Constitution pages. That don't stop the cops from escorting all your babies. To get home safe, we shotcast and taser. The whole world knows what our greatest mistake is.
Donald Trump is a fucking piece of shit. Donald Trump just is a fucking piece of shit. Donald Trump just is a fucking piece of shit. Donald Trump just a fucking grade A douchebag. He's just a fucking piece of shit.
And tonight we are here to try and get an understanding of what it is they've come up with.
The white power structure today is just as much interested in perpetuating slavery as the white power structure was 100 years ago. Only now they use modern methods of doing so. And realizing that the black people in this country are waking up and becoming filled with a desire to be looked upon as men and as human beings. The white power structure to slow down this struggle for freedom and human dignity uses